Day at 7 p.m. every month. If you don't know what the concepts are, or if you've heard of them but would like to learn more, I cannot recommend this group more highly. It's a great way to learn more about our fellowship. And so with that, let me please introduce Spencer.
Thanks, Bill. Hey, everyone. My name is Spencer. I'm an alcoholic. I want to welcome the newcomers tonight. I'm really glad you're here. I remember when I was brand new, I was not glad to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. But, you know, the good news for me is that when I walked in the door, there was a group of guys in my home group that really welcomed me. And they offered me a bit of hope, because what was happening in that group is those guys were armed with facts about alcoholism. And they were talking about, talking about their alcoholism, the way they drank, the way they felt, and the way they thought. And, you know, and I began to identify with that. Those were the first things I identified when I remember I walked in the door. It wasn't so much the war stories, but the way guys thought and felt. You know, I felt like, wow, these guys were talking my language. And, the good news is, you know, they taught me I had this incurable disease, progressive fatal illness. But so the good news is if you identify with the way we're thinking and feeling, Spencer, that you can identify with our solution. And, you know, and that's in those 12 steps. And I remember when I walked in that home group, those guys surrounded me. And, you know, and I was a little kind of intimidated and a little, it was like 12 guys that cornered me in this room of 150 guys. My home group's about 150 guys. And, you know, they walked up to me and they didn't ask me hard questions. They asked me what my marital status was, what my credit score was, well, you know, to have a place to live. You know, what they said was, you know, do you have a meeting schedule? Do you know when your next meeting is? You know, do you have a sponsor? Do you know where you're going tonight? Do you want to come with us for fellowship? And again, they just welcomed me. And I remember I said yes that night, and I sat down to coffee, and I remember the guy who was to become my grand sponsor cracked open the book, and he started reading the doctor's opinion. And he taught me that three parts about disease of alcoholism, right? He said, Spencer, you know, as an alcoholic, we have this mental obsession. You know, eventually a time and a place is going to come. The book, and I think at the end of chapter 3 describes it like the alcoholic has no effective mental defense against the first drink. You know, it's not if you're going to drink, it's when you're going to drink, you're an alcoholic, unless you can get a spiritual solution. You know, and then he talked about the fact that because I will always try that failed experiment of the first drink, and I also have what's called the phenomenon of craving. You know, I like to call it, you know, it's an allergy that differentiates between me and, you know, the rest of my family who are normal drinkers. And, you know, at least my mom's side. That's not true. I'll talk more about alcoholism within my family. But, you know, these CI people, you know, people I work with, they can drink one drink and show up to work and go to lunch. You know, but once I take that first drink, it's on. You know, I have no idea. I've lost the ability to control my drinking. I do not know what's going to happen when I ingest a drink. But they also stress this thing I don't hear much talked about in AA meetings, where they talked about the spiritual malady. And they said, Spencer, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you have a spiritual dis-ease. The book describes it as restless, irritable discontent. You know, if you read page 52, I think that it really describes what untreated alcoholism looks like, those bedevilments, right? You know, I was a prey to misery and depression. I couldn't be of use. I had a feeling of uselessness. You know, I was unemployable, and, you know, and I identified with all those things because I can be those things with or without a drink in my body, right? You know, that's my baseline as an alcoholic. When I wake up in the morning, I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. And I was joking with my buddy today. We were playing, you know, slow pitch sober softball, and I was laughing. I'm like, I'm frustrated right now, and I'm all, but I guess that's not that easy of a place for me to be, right? You know, that's my natural state of being. So, yeah, that being said, you know, I have a sobriety date. It's March 1st, 2008. I've celebrated 13 years of recovery in March, and I have a home group. It's a Monday Night Men's Stag in Tiburon. I'm talking to you tonight from the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm about 15 minutes north of Golden Gate Bridge. It's a group of about 150 men, and we talk about sponsorship, service, and the 12 steps. And it's been a good group for me. I participate in that home group. I take commitments, and I'm involved. I sponsor other men. I believe strongly in that. It's the only thing that's ever been asked of me in Alcoholics Anonymous is to give this thing away. And so I do. I take that very seriously. And I'm actively sponsored by a man. I call him frequently. He knows what's going on in my life. I don't hide things from him. I give him the 100% truth, even when it's horribly embarrassing. But he knows what's going on in my life. And he gets that through 10 steps. You know, I write written inventories on a regular basis because I get jammed up with self, and I get spiritually sick, and the only way I can do that is through 10 and 11. And I don't say these things to you to try to impress you guys and let you know how much I do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I just want to let you know it's not by accident that I celebrated 13 years in March. You know, I'm an active participant in my own recovery. I show up and I put skin in the game in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think it's really important that I was telling you guys, like, put some skin in the game, take commitments, get involved. Becoming involved, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is a lot more enjoyable when I participate in it. And I'm an active participant in my own recovery and other people's recovery. When I say yes to things in Alcoholics Anonymous, for some reason, my life gets better. And I don't know how or why that works, but it's just been my experience over the last 13 years. When I say yes to stuff, my life gets better. What it was like, I grew up in a really dysfunctional home. I was born to two people who were very loving, but very sick. My parents were heroin addicts. They're two people that probably had no business having a child, but they did. And here I was. My parents were strung out from the jump, and God bless them. They were just, again, sick people. I learned a lot of fear, a lot of confusion from a very early age. And I just felt very unsafe from a very young age. And, and it was just very confusing constantly. You know, people were ODing and dying at my house. We constantly had first responders, police and EMTs and firefighters. You know, we were that house on the block. And it was embarrassing. I remember just being mortified and embarrassed at 3 and 4 years old of what was going on in my house. But I would go to my parents and say, hey, Mom and Dad, you know, what happened to, you know, Uncle Tommy? Why is he leaving in a stretcher? And my mom would look at me and be like, oh, baby, there's nothing wrong. Everything is okay. And it was confusing because what I was seeing and the feedback I was getting was, you know, didn't match up. And so, it was difficult. And so I stopped trusting the people that I needed to be trustworthy in my life. And, and it was just a very scary home and a scary childhood. I don't like to go too far into it, but, you know, there was sexual abuse, there was physical abuse, there was emotional abuse. And ultimately, I've forgiven and loved those people, but, you know, my parents let me down, you know, and that's the only way I could say it. And it wasn't fun. But when I was about 5 years old, my mom decided that she had had enough, and she decided to go to a long-term treatment facility here in Marin County. And it was going to be for 6 months that she was going to stay in that place. So I was either going to go into foster care or live with a family member. My dad at the time, he's in the rock music industry. He played for Steve Miller, Van Morrison, and he's a talented guitar player, not a great dad. But, you know, he wanted nothing to do with taking care of a five-year-old by himself. He was having too much fun ripping and running. And so by, you know, the grace of God, my aunt and uncle took me into their home. And, you know, and I love those people to death. They were like second parents to me, and my cousins are like brothers and sisters. But it was a really abrupt change. I went from living with two junkies to a family of fundamentalist Christians. And I have absolutely, you know, nothing against fundamentalist Christians, but I went from living in total and utter chaos to, like, my uncle was this total, like, authoritarian, and he had rules, and if you didn't follow him, there were consequences. I remember, you know, the rule that, you know, you weren't allowed to leave the table until you'd eat all your vegetables. And I legitimately had not seen a vegetable up until that point in my life. And so it was just like, what is going on? But, you know, on the flip side, what they did is these people paid attention to me. They walked me to and from school. They loved me. They told me they loved me. They showed me they loved me. They introduced me to sports. They were there. And that felt really good. And again, I'm so grateful to that family because they basically took a feral 5-year-old child into the home when their kids were in, like, late in high school. So they were about to get kids out of the house. They took me into their home for a year and a half. And so they're really good people. And, you know, again, I cannot be more grateful to them. And I remember my mom worked a program in Alcoholics Anonymous, and so I knew about AA before I walked in the door. And again, it was another thing I was very grateful for, because I knew when my mom went to you guys, what she brought back was a really good mom, and a mom who was attentive, present, accountable. You know, she was practicing spiritual principles in her home. And I was a major beneficiary of that. And so, again, I was eternally grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous before I had ever attended a meeting for my own alcoholism. And so life was good from the time my mom got sober. You know, it was a good home, and I was, you know, food in my belly, clothes in my back. You know, my mom signed me up for all these team sports, and that was another thing that made me feel really safe was team sports. I had a measure of talent with them, so I got a lot of attaboys. I made all-star teams, got trophies, and I felt really safe. I don't know about you guys, there's a lot of rules, right? There's rules in team sports. I play a position. It's very, like, you know, it's very safe. I felt very safe between the lines of sporting events. I always did. And, you know, and again, it was a way for me to build my self-worth and self-esteem at a young age. Because to tell you the truth, I had none up until that point. I just low self-worth. I did not like myself. I thought I was unlovable. And that's one of my oldest narratives. I'm unlovable. And so it taught me self-worth and, you know, and it was good. I remember, you know, my first drink came, like, you know, I'm sure a lot of people can identify with this. We broke into my parents, you know, my buddy's parents' liquor cabinet. We chose very poorly. We chose E&J brandy and Gilby's gin and mixed those together and drank them, you know, and it was not a tasty treat, but, you know, I like the effect produced by alcohol, and we drank that thing down. The effect produced by, you know, it got me there. You know, and it got me. I love that head change that came with the first drink. You know, that buzz. You know, it just settled down what was going on between my ears. All that thinking, all that fear, all that self doubt just went away. I blacked out my first time. So, you know, again, I didn't know people had. Most people don't have alcohol induced amnesia, i.e., blacking out. I came to AA, and you guys told me that is normal, not a normal reaction to alcohol. And so I remember I blacked out my first night. I woke up outdoors underneath this giant, you know, giant trampoline. I don't remember, kids used to have those back, and I woke underneath that. And I remember I walked back in my buddy's house, and I just got that look of disappointment from his family that I was to get from many people in my drinking career. And apparently I punched his little brother. I broke a bunch of stuff around their house. I remember when my mom came to pick me up, they were in no uncertain terms was I no longer allowed in their home. And again, that was another theme to be in my drinking career was I was not welcome back to a lot of places that I attended. They were very clear that they didn't want me around. You know, it was funny, but after I drank, I was like, oh, I'm an athlete. Athletes don't do that. You know, but I got to high school and I went to this private Catholic high school here in Marin County. And if you don't know, Marin is a very affluent area. I did not grow up affluent at all. But I felt very apart from, you know, I grew up in a very blue collar neighborhood, and I get to this school, and I remember this girl sitting next to me in my sophomore year of high school was telling me that she didn't want the Range Rover that her dad offered her for her 16th birthday. She wanted a BMW. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I'm driving a 71 Dodge Dart that all my high school buddies nicknamed the sex offender, you know, and told me that I belonged on Unsolved Mysteries and I looked like, you know, a criminal. And, you know, and my grandmother's knit blankets are the interior. And I'm going, man, like, I'm so grateful for that car. You know, and I felt apart from and different from those people. But I fell into a group of guys that liked to party. And they were blue collar and they were there like me on an academic scholarship. And they were my running buddies in high school. And I remember, essentially, I developed into becoming a juvenile delinquent. And what we would do is I remember we would go into local parties and we would start a fight to distract everybody. Our aim was to steal the keg from the party or steal all the alcohol. And then I would sneak away and I would go to, you know, whoever's parents', you know, bedroom was, and I would break into the medicine cabinet and go to the, you know, the nightstands, and I would steal all the pill bottles. And, you know, my big joke is I never got anything good. I always got, like, psoriasis medication and, you know, birth control pills. But, like, I was a thief. And it was something that I remember when I did my four-step inventory, a really good point that my sponsor made is he said, you know, Spencer, what you did, you probably stole medications that people needed. You know, they were, you know, and I remember looked up one, and one was an epilepsy medication. And he said, you know, you took people's necessary medication. They probably needed to maybe save their life. And so, you know, you know, and I had to make a living amends for stuff like that. And it was points that I couldn't even think of in the moment, right? Because I was just so busy trying to change the way I felt that I would do anything to do that. And that includes, you know, playing with your life. And so, high school, I paid a lot of legal consequences. But again, I don't know about you guys, but my alcoholic mind loves to play the victim narrative. I can be a victim when, you know, very little fault, you know, is on the world to me. And I remember just thinking to myself, you know, I had 8 minor possessions, you know, assault charges, possession charges. I was on probation and the youth substance abuse program in Marin County. But again, it's not my fault. You know, our local police department has nothing else better to do than to bus high school kids. It's not my fault. And at the same time, I remember, you know, what I did is I learned to lead a double life, like it talks about in the big book. And what I did is I did well in school and I did well in sports. And, you know, my people excused my behavior and they let it continue to go on. And I remember I graduated high school with honors and I was able to get a scholarship to go play sports down south. And, you know, and it was as off to the races when I went to college. You know, I played a team sport down there. So I had to be responsible during the week. You know, I remember, but Saturday night was, I would aim for blackout. And, you know, I remember I would shut myself off from my room in college and I would buy a 5th or a 12 pack and I would finish those before I could go to the party or the bar. And again, I didn't know until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that if you have to drink to go out drinking, you know, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, right? You know, again, that's not a normal relationship with alcohol, but I didn't know that until I got here and you guys told me that. And so, you know, and I was a guy that had to drink to go out drinking. And so it was something that, you know, again, I was paying legal consequences. My coach was not happy because I constantly came to practice with casts on. I was constantly getting injured while drunk. I remember I spent a lot of time in the drunk tank in college, you know, and I remember one time I tried to, we had the largest Mardi Gras celebration west of the Mississippi in San Luis Obispo when I went to college. And in a blackout, I decided to try to hug a police officer in riot gear. And apparently that's a really bad idea. They don't like that. They beat the crap out of me. And I remember this, you know, they put me down and they charged me with assault of a police officer. And I only got out of it because some woman took pictures of them beating the hell out of me. And so we took a compromise. I took a couple things. But again, like, that's where my drinking leads me. You know, it's just poor choices and blackouts and you know, getting by on the skin of my teeth. And, but again, you know, I'm a victim. Slow PD has nothing else better to do than to bust and to beat up college kids. I can't take a look at my drinking. I'm not taking a look at what's going on. And again, what I'm doing is I'm doing well in school and I'm doing well in sports and all the, you know, all the adults in my life are, he's going to grow out of it. And, you know, it's funny. I remember, you know, and again, I mean, I missed out on a lot of things. I had a lot of privileged experience. I remember I went to study in Europe for, you know, for 4 months. I went and lived in Italy. And again, I just spent most of the time drinking and blacking out. You know, apparently, I mean, I've been to a country that I don't remember going to. I blacked out for 3 days and I have pictures of me being in Switzerland and I have no recollection of being there. And, you know, but again, it's like we cannot take a look at that stuff and it's just sad. But, you know, what I do is I graduate college. I decide to, take a job up in Northern California because what my mom did, my mom at the time, she contracted hepatitis C through IV drug use and she was dying. She decided to raise me and not do the treatment because she was a single mom and she'd rather put me through college than to sit. At the time she would have to take a year off of work. And for her, that was not an option. And my mom was my angel, my best friend. And she told me, Spencer, I have full-blown cirrhosis. They're not going to give me a transplant. I need someone to come home and take care of me. And so at 22 years old, I decided to come home and take care of my mom and be her primary caregiver. And, man, that was, you know, it took a hole in my soul watching my mom die on a daily basis like that. You know, and it was something that my drinking began to take off at that time. And I began to drink to numb out that pain of watching that woman die slowly on a daily basis and watch her suffering. At the same time, you know, I met a woman that was the Bonnie to my Clyde. I always call her that. And she partied like I like to party. And in fact, she taught me a few tricks. And so I fell in love quick. And I always like to tell the story because I just like to remind people that I needed an overhaul in my life besides just drinking. I remember I was on my third date with this woman, and we went to a nightclub. And I remember a bouncer tapped me on the shoulder, and he said, "Did you walk in here with a blonde, sir?" I said, "Yes, I did." He said, "Come with me." And he opened up the door to this woman's bathroom, and I'm watching this woman I'm on a date with smash another girl's face into the mirror while she's screaming at her. And I just shrugged my shoulders. I slung her over my shoulder, and I moved into there a week later. And so it just goes to show you that I have very high standards for what I bring into my life. If you're a woman, it's like, if you're pretty, it'll validate me no matter what baggage or red flags you have. I will bring you into my life. And, so I needed that sexual inventory and that fifth step to take a look at, what I was welcoming in my door, and it was something that I didn't think twice about it. And it was, pure insanity. And so, my drinking just got worse and worse, and eventually my mom passed away, and I remember at that point, I didn't want to be alive. And I began drinking around the clock. I was 25 years old when my mom died, I think, or 24 and a half. I remember that. And it was 24 and a half, and I just began drinking around the clock. And I began stealing her high-powered sedative. She was prescribed like 500 OxyContin a month, and I was remember drinking a ton of vodka and taking her high-powered sedative. And, that was me. I identify with that in the book. I wanted to be numb. And that stuff not only takes away physical pain, it took away that emotional pain. And I was just chasing those pills with vodka on a daily basis. And I was getting worse. And, what was happening for me and what was scaring, and I was so grateful when I came to AA, they broke it down for me, is on those days that I would wake up not wanting to drink. I needed a break. I'm not going to drink today, whether I have to go to work. I got to show up someplace. And invariably, by like 2 o'clock, I'm drunk again. And I couldn't understand why, and I just kept trying that failed experiment, first drink, over and over again. Because if you had hooked me up to a lie detector test at 8 a.m., I guarantee you I would have passed. I meant that I did not want to drink that day, but invariably I got drunk. And, I kept drinking. And what I couldn't do is I couldn't string together any sobriety. And I was beginning to get scared. I was scared of that. And so my drinking was worse. My health was getting worse. People were concerned. I remember, my first birthday after my mom died, they threw a party of about 40 people. They cooked all this wonderful food. And I didn't show up. I got stuck in San Francisco waiting for the drug dealer to come around rather than spend time with my family. And the book, was read today. They talk about pitiful and comprehensible demoralization. Well, that's it for me. When I can't show up to my own birthday party and the jig was up, and I remember my family just asked me not to come around anymore. And they said, "You scare the kids. You're erratic. You're angry all the time. We don't trust you, and we don't want you around." They made it clear, though, that if I wanted help, they would be there. And so I remember I drank for about another year, and my life got really small. I wasn't homeless. I was living in my car. And so I had a place to live and I had 4 wheels. And, my life got small. People no longer talked to me. My health was bad. I OD'd twice and almost died, but that wasn't enough. Almost dying was not, something for me. And I don't know why, but in February 2008, it wasn't my worst day drinking, and it wasn't the bottom, and it wasn't the most painful day. But I had that moment of grace, and I was done. I don't know why, but I picked up the phone and I called my manager, and I said, I need some time off of work. And she asked me why, and I said, "I have a drinking problem." And I think, "Oh, you do?" I was like, "Oh, thank God. I was gonna have to fire you." And I remember I called my aunt and all these people, and she was giving me a hallelujah, and people were crying. And it turns out the only person that was fooled by my drinking was me. And what I did that day is I committed to going to a 28-day treatment facility, and what that facility got me physically well enough to do Alcoholics Anonymous. And they brought outside meetings in, and they had men and women come in and tell their story like I'm doing right now. They talked about the Alcoholics Anonymous and solution, and it got me fired enough to AA to go to an outside meeting. And I remember my second outside meeting. I remember I went to this young people's meeting that I never went to after that, but I met this guy who's been my first sponsor, and he was a collegiate athlete. He had 5 years of sobriety, and he was on fire in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, and I asked him to sponsor me that night, and he said, you know, Spencer, my job is to keep you in the big book. We're going to read a chapter a week. When we get to a step, we're going to work it. And I want to make it clear that, you know, if you're new, if you hear any message from me, you know, it's important to go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. It's important to have a fellowship of men and women around you. But it's my experience that if that's all you do, you're not going to make it. You know, meeting makers don't make it. Meeting makers who work the 12 steps make it. And so for me, I always like to touch on, my experience of the 12 step and the spiritual journey that began in those 12 steps. If you work them, it's going to be different for you. But like I said, I like to touch on my experience. And, I remember when we got in the book and we were reading, and, you know, I remember when I was new, I constantly heard people talk about it, you know, alcohol is only mentioned in the first step. And it's like, well, that's true if you're working the steps off the banners on the wall. Because what happened for me in my experience is, you know, before I got to page, 30 in the big book Alcoholics Anonymous and they could take my first step, they talked a lot about alcohol. They talked a lot about alcoholism, and it shows up in the thinking that precedes the first drink. You know, Jim with the whiskey and milk, and Fred with the highball before dinner and the blackout. And what my sponsor did is, you know, the judges, the family, the friends, all those people constantly telling me that I was an alcoholic, my sponsor didn't do that. He kept pointing out and saying, Spencer, did your drinking match up with that? Do you identify with what's on these pages? And, you know, and I remember I'd be like, yeah, I do. And he said, then you're probably an alcoholic. And so by the time I got to page 30, and, you know, and it asked me to, you know, can I admit to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic? I knew what I was admitting to, right? It wasn't just some, we understood what I was saying yes to. And I understood what that self-diagnosis meant. That, you know, again, if I thought it was, you know, if I had your problem, the only way I was going to get better is if I embraced your solution. And like it talks about, you know, the end of chapter 3, you know, at certain times, you know, an alcoholic has no effective mental defense against the first drink. You know, that defense is not going to come from another human or myself. It must come from a higher power. And if you're new and you're rankled by the word God and you're rankled by the word higher power or whatever, it's okay. We don't ask you to buy in right away. It's just, are you willing to believe in those things? And I remember when I started reading We Agnostics and we got to that second step, you know, the wording of the step's wonderful. It says came to believe, right? It doesn't say we need you to believe right away. It's, you know, that's a process. You can have some doubt. You can have some trepidation. That's okay. And I remember when he asked me that, you know, Spencer, are you willing to believe or do you believe in a power greater than yourself? I told him maybe. I don't know, but maybe. And he said, all right, you know, we're well on our way. And he's all fired up. And I'm like, really? A maybe got you? You know, but he was like, yeah, that's all you need for right now. And you know, what you're going to do, we were going to move on to your third step. And, you know, and we got to my third step. And I identified so much of that chapter 5, right? You know, the actor trying to run the play, you know, stepping on the toes where a fellow's then retaliating. You know, I can identify with all that. But, you know, when I was new, my third step was simply doing steps 4 through 9 and taking some action in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember, doing that writing in that 4-step assignment. And that's all it is. You know, if you're new and you're scared of that 4-step, it's just a writing assignment. And what happened for me when I did that is the truth came out on those pages for the first time in my life. You know, and the book started talking about these forms of self that were killing me. Resentment, dishonesty, self-centeredness, and fear. And I remember writing those columns and writing these resentments, these people that I hated. You know, I talk about resentment, I had bitterness and hate towards people because that resentment had been festering so long for me. And for me, what it was is when I looked and I did that writing and I got feedback from my sponsor, it turns out I'm not a victim. I'm not a victim of life. I have a role in all the happenings and all the things that go on. And I remember I asked him, you know, what role do I have in that resentment from all my childhood and the abuse that went on? He said, Spencer, that stuff happened 20-something years ago, and you're still holding on to it, and you're still actively feeding it. That's your part. And so, you know, it's one of those things where, I got down to a fears list. I thought that was a big, tough guy, and it turns out, you know, everything and everyone I'm scared of. I'm scared of losing what I already have, not getting what I want. You're not going to like me. You're going to judge me. Those are my chief fears that go through my head throughout the day. you know, but I remember I had this list of like 85 fears, and I was scared of all these things. And, you know, I did that sexual inventory, and I got honest with my behavior with the opposite sex, or, you know, and the troubles and problems I had, because, you know, I've had troubles with all that stuff into sobriety. And, you know, but when my sponsor did that, Daisy had me, you know, come up with an ideal for myself, and then come up with an ideal for the person that I wanted to have in my life. And he said, when you can work towards that ideal for yourself, Spencer, you'll attract her. And that's been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, and the opposite's been true. When I stopped working towards, sorry, my dog over here, I apologize. So, when I work towards, you know, him, I'll attract her. And when I stop working towards him, I lose her. You know, I got down to a harms done list, which has become a bulk of my A-step list, and I got honest. And, you know, I remember that fifth step was freeing. And what it was, I just told the truth for the first time. And everyone got, that guy got the whole truth. I remember he was jotting down these things, and I was wondering what he was doing. And he handed me my list of character defects. And he said, this is who you are. You know, this is who you are when you get into self-centered fear. And, you know, I was a little taken aback. He was like, you know, he didn't write you're manipulative. He's like, you're a master manipulator. And he had all these superlatives next to my character defects, and I was a little offended. But what I did is I had to accept some chunks of truth about myself that day, and that is how I behave when I get into fear and I don't have a conscious contact with a power greater than myself. You know, and it's funny, you know, you do chapter 6 and 7, and it's two paragraphs in the big book, and then you read the 12 and 12, and it's like, this is what separates the men from the boys, this is the work, and it's kind of confusing, you know, but it's like, it's true for me. You know, I'm as physically sober as the day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, but what's my behavior look like out in the world? You know, and it's one of those things where it's that's a continual process for me, because it's like character defects will show up in different ways. But what happens in 6 and 7, my experience, it's just like my drinking. You know, I can't get rid of it on my own, right? I always like when some people talk about, you know, like I'm working on 6 and 7, like, well, what are you doing exactly? You know, and it's like, for me, what it is I have to just get willing enough to ask a God of my understanding to relieve me of these things. Yeah, I need to practice some contrary action. I can't ask God to relieve me of lying when I just can go and lie all day. And I can't ask him to relieve me of lust and stare at women all day. Like, that's not the way that's going to work. You know, because if I'm entirely willing, I'm willing to practice a different behavior. And, you know, when I got down to 8, 9, and, you know, that process was the most freeing for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember I went back to people and I made amends. And it wasn't just I'm sorry, because I had said I'm sorry a lot. And that was full of hot air. And the people wouldn't believe me. And my sponsor said, what you're going to do is you're going to go back. You're not going to talk about your drinking. You're just going to talk about what you did to them and how you harmed them. And you're going to ask them what you can do to make this right. And, you know, that's what I did. And I went back with, and I said, here's how I harmed you. What can I do to make this right? And I got a lot of feedback, some of it really positive. People like, you know, good job, Spencer, we love you. And other people are like, hey, man, you know, good for you, but we don't want you to contact us anymore. And you know what my amends was? I didn't contact them for a really long time. And, you know, to give you guys hope, I don't want to scare you on the ninth step. Like, all those people have since come back and said, hey, you know, listen, we hear you're living differently. Do you want to try that amends again? You want to talk? And I'm square. And the beauty of the nine-step process for me is I took responsibility for my behavior for the first time in my life. I didn't make excuses. I didn't put it off. I didn't say this. I said, this is what I did. I was clear and I was truthful. And what I can do now out in the world is I can hold my head up high. I don't think who's knocking at my door. I don't think about who's walking down the street, who I lied to, what I said, what. I'm square, you know. And, you know, the good news is in 10, 11, 12, I'll talk about, if I create more harms, I know what to do. You know, I know to go. And for me, you know, it was clear to me that, you know, an amends is I have to amend my behavior. And so if I go and make an amends to somebody, that means I need to adjust my behavior accordingly. My sponsor said, if you're not willing to adjust your behavior, then you don't get to make that amends. And so that was important. You know, today I live in 10, 11, and 12. And what that means for me is, I do written inventories, and I believe in putting pen to paper, you know, a few times a week to stay current, because I have the experience in about 3 years of sobriety. I stopped inventorying. I stopped being current. I didn't talk about resentment, selfish dishonesty, and fear in my life. I thought I was well. You know, I had that delusion that I was well. And what happened to me is I became very spiritually sick again, and I'm really, I'm blessed that I did not drink. I don't know how. I was living with such painful, untreated alcoholism, and I was just ripping through people's lives. I was dishonest with people. I was, you know, dishonest in my romantic relationship. I was just not living a sober life, and I had no idea what spiritual principles was. You know, and my sponsor got down. He said, you know, you have to grow an understanding of effect dispenser, and you're not. And it's because you're not doing a strong 10-11 practice. And so for me, I have to work to be free of those forms of self and those forms of spiritual poison to have a strong 11 step, you know? And so when I hit my knees in the morning, and I know it's not in the big book, but that's my experience, and that's how I, you know, practice my spiritual journey. When I pray and meditate, I want to be free of self. You know, I can't be a channel for my higher powers, love, and grace if I'm jammed up with me. And, you know, and for me, what I do in 10, 11, 12, it helps me carry out step 12. You know, when I go to sponsor guys and I'm not spiritually current, I'm not spiritually fit, then I'm just sponsoring them through my own BS. I'm sponsoring through my own defects, and those guys deserve better. I've made a commitment to them to stay, be a fit spiritual guy. So when I go to help others or try to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, it can be clear and my higher power can speak through me. You know, and I love AA. Like, you know, Bill talked about, I've done a lot of service in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's something I never really strive to do. You know, I remember I got railroaded in my home group to go into general service, and, you know, and it's dry. And, you know, but what it is it gets to serve the alcoholic who hasn't made it through that door yet. I remember I was about a year into my first GSR commitment, and I remember sitting in an assembly, and these people were all giving their weekend up for fun and for free. And I thought about the fact that these people had been doing that before a guy like me who was dying of alcoholism could walk in that door. They were giving their time up to make sure that I would have a room to walk into and a message to hear. And it was just my turn. It was my turn to be of service and to hold those doors open for the alcoholic that hasn't made it into Alcoholics Anonymous yet. And so, you know, and that's been a beautiful journey as well. You know, and what I do through service is I get to learn how to live life, because I did not have a lot of life skills when I walked into AA. I thought I did, but, you know, I was the guy that couldn't show up on time. I couldn't say what I was going to do. I had no accountability. And through service work and commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned to do those things. I learned to show up on time, learned to, you know, follow up on doing what I was going to say. I learned to, you know, shoot. I mean, I took the district treasurer commitment and everything, and it was something that I did not feel qualified for, but what it did is it helped me learn about my own finances. I was terrible with money, and, you know, and I was protecting the group's money or the district's money, but I was terrible with my own. And by doing that and taking a look at that, you know, I was able to take a look at how my relationship with money, and that changed. And the beauty is, you know, my partner and I were able to save up money to buy a home in Marin County. That's something that I never thought was going to be on the table. And that's not a humble brag. Like, I was the guy, when I walked into AA, I was not allowed to have a bank account, because apparently banks frown upon fraud. Apparently they're not into that. They don't let you have a bank account. Having a bank account is a privilege, not a right. And so when I earned my paycheck, I had to cash it and put the money in a coffee can. And so I got to come a long way, and that's all to you guys in Alcoholics Anonymous, and just telling me to say yes. Say yes to AA. And, you know, what my life looks like today is I have a good, simple life, and I like it like that. You know, my ego used to not be able to be Joe Q Citizen. I either had to be the best or the worst at something. And I have a good life. You know, I live with my partner, and she and I have been together 6 years. She's a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we have the 12 steps in our home. We have that language. You know, and it's a strong bond between us. You know, we both have our own higher powers. We both have our own programs, but that makes for a better relationship. I've been employed at the same company my entire sobriety. They trust me. They're happy with me. They've asked me, to be management. I declined, but, you know, they trust me enough to help others, and they see Alcoholics Anonymous. I get to bring AA to my work life. And, you know, when I've had ups and downs, I lost that uncle that took me into her home to cancer. That aunt, you know, has breast cancer. And so, you know, and I've lost friends. I remember, you know, it's been a sad couple weeks. A guy that I lived with and a guy that was my close friend, he decided that he was going to pick up a drink. And 5 days later, he was found in his car dead. That man, you know, he was married 10 days before he died. And, you know, unfortunately, that's the stuff I get to see in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hate it. I hate alcoholism, but the only thing I know how to do is to keep coming to meetings, keep helping guys that walk through the door to try to save some other family from not having to get that phone call, because that phone call is gut-wrenching, and I've received way too many of them in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I love AA. I love what I do here. My family's grateful for you guys. My friends are grateful for you guys. You know, and I'm just going to keep coming back. And so I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say. So thanks for having me.
Wow. Thank you, Spencer. That was fantastic. Really appreciate you coming here and sharing your experience with us tonight. So thank you very much. We are now going to start the discussion part of our meeting. And we'd like to hear from as many different people as possible. So just keep that in mind as you're sharing. We have about 30 minutes left, just less than 30 minutes left before we'll close up the meeting. And so it's now I have the opportunity to turn the meeting back over to Spencer, who will call on people to share.
Let's talk about your experience with the second step. I would like to hear that. Let's hear about your step two. And that's came to believe that a power greater than yourself to restore your sanity.
Do you want to maybe call on some people or?
Sure. My buddy AJ. AJ, do you want to share tonight? Guess not. You can talk about whatever you want, guys. I mean, Jose, let's hear from you, bud. Sorry.
Okay. My name's Jose, and I'm an alcoholic. You said about the second step, but came to believe in a power higher than myself. I grew up as believing that there was a higher power higher than myself, like God. You know, I heard about a God, that there was a God, but I never had a spiritual awakening until later on in life. And so I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I started learning about the spiritual awakening. But I do, when I did step two with my sponsor, I did share a little bit that I have a higher power that I chose that for me is the God as I understand him, and is I can relate to what you said about getting up in the morning and or at night before I go to bed and before I turn on the day, before I give up my day and go to sleep, to get on my knees and just, or especially in the morning, to get up and just give my day to God, you know, give my will to God as I understand him, and you know, to help me with my character defects and to give me strength for the day to continue to stay sober and to accomplish what he has for me for that day, and to do the, you know, what is required of me in AA and to work on the steps, you know, to continue working the steps. And as me and my sponsor, we've been reading the big book, and he's got me, he knows what he's doing with me, and he's leading me, and I'm totally in the hands of a higher power, because I know that if it wasn't for AA, and I would not have any knowledge of that sickness or that allergy that used to get me to go back and drink and back and drink, you know, without couldn't stop. I couldn't stop, and because I didn't have a program, I didn't get the steps, I didn't get the experience of others that have been able to stay sober one day at a time, working the steps and having a sponsor and going to meetings and hearing, you know, speakers like you, you know, and you know, thanks to that, I mean, I have gained a little bit of more conscience and it brought me to a spiritual awakening later days to know that I do, you know, have to put in and be fully committed to the 12 steps and to my sponsor and to all the things that I do for sobriety, especially because that's what keeps me sober. And you know, to be fully committed and to put as much as I put is as much as I'm going to get back. Because if I just, you know, I remember years back when I first started AA, I didn't know too much about AA, but I remember that I used to just thinking that just going to meetings was going to help me. But I think by the grace of God, I didn't want to drink. But, you know, just that along, by keep on going to meetings, I noticed that working the steps and listening to the experiences of others that were fully committed, you know, got me to know that by being fully committed, you get results. And when you have a spiritual awakening and you fully commit yourself, I mean, and I fully committed myself, then I started seeing positive results of humbleness, of just, you know, great experience in AA that I, before I was like, you know, this is going to contradict my belief or, you know, it doesn't matter now what I used to believe. It matters what AA has proven to be in my life by working the steps and having a sponsor and being committed. And I just take that, you know, for today, because I only know that today, you know, I take another 24 hours with that today. So thank you for listening.
Ms. Cruz, do you want to share?
I was just texting you right now on the chat. When I had my camera off right now, I just got news that a cousin of mine got shot and killed earlier today in Arizona. So I'm like, I'm kind of, I don't know. Right now I want to go to my family's, but I know if I go over there, I'm going to drink, and I don't want to. So I got people calling me right now, and I just turned my phone off, and I'm like, nope, I'm not doing it. I don't want to answer nobody back. So I guess right now, how you brought up for the higher power. So I did a little prayer right now, because I do believe. Because without that higher power, we can't do nothing. It's all because of him. We ask and I'm sorry. Can you guys, like, come back to me? Let me get, like...
Absolutely.
I'm sorry.
Sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Condolences. AJ, you said you're back. You want to share, bud? Step two?
I am back. Yeah, thank you. Great meeting. Thanks for your share, Spencer. I'm visiting from the same area as Spencer, and actually from Visalia, born and raised there. But I thought Visalia and Fresno was my problem, so I moved over here, and I realized I was still stuck with me. So I come and visit frequently. Can't wait to go see you guys in meetings in person there. Sorry, I'm driving. So step two, yeah. Right now, I had 30 days, a little over 30 days, and just got a new sponsor, and I am to be respectful, I'm not going to speak about step two right now, but I just want to check in and say thank you for being here, Spencer, that was an awesome share. It was great to hear your story and that length. And you're a rock solid member of AA. So thank you for showing me how it's done and being there for me through thick and thin. I'm just going to shut up. So I'll stop babbling. But thank you for having this meeting. And, for those of you that are struggling, keep coming back. And I found that, wherever you go, AA will be there. I don't think I have another relapse in me, so I'm going to stay. But love you guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Age. Darlene, put your hand up.
Yes. My name's Darlene. I'm an alcoholic, and came to believe that a power greater than myself restored me to sanity. I'm absolutely sure of it because every time I got any type of sanity in my life, it was always when he threw me in these rooms. But I seemed to couldn't stay because, I was doing my own thing. I was doing my own will. And I just didn't stay long enough to understand the program or to grasp the program. But every time I got any type of peace of mind and, life was starting to go good, it was always in the rooms, So my higher power kept throwing me in here, but it took me a while to stay. But I'm glad he never gave up on me. He just kept putting me back in here and just kept putting me back in there. But recently, if I could share about something, I had my brother. He's still he relapsed and he called me on the phone. I haven't heard from him in a while, and I was kind of upset. I thought he didn't care about me and stuff like that. But then, he shared, how he lost his job and, he relapsed and he's been out there in the streets for a couple of days and him and his girl was going through it. And, I'm like, whoa. And, I can't be mad at him because, he's really going through it. And so he asked me to send him $20. So I sent him some money and I asked what he used, and he was like, not right now. So that let me know, something ain't right. What you mean? Not right now. So anyway, I sent him the money for gas, and I sent him more than he asked. So I asked him, did he want to come visit me? And he said, yeah. So he wound up coming up, to visit me. I lived like an hour and a half from him. And he actually, did the right thing, caught me on video chat, and I seen him, get the gas and, stuff like that. And it's really sad when I look back on it, because, I remember when I was in that space, when I was in that head space, but, what's really scary is that, he came here and I was petrified the both nights that he was here because, in the past, my family has tried, certain family members have tried to help him and, he robbed them. And I was like, I was praying to God, calling myself hiding things without him seeing me hiding because I didn't want him to get, uncomfortable or I didn't want to trigger him to feel, even more depressed than what he really was. But it was really a scary, almost scary situation for me, because, I didn't want to wake up and, my stuff is gone, or, whatever. And, I can't beat my brother, I mean, he's a man, I can't beat no man. So, I'm thinking about all this stuff. But anyway, he wound up yeah, talking to his girl. I didn't really want to talk to his girl because I didn't want to condone the fact of the misery, the pain that this girl is feeling. And I didn't want to make it seem like she should take my brother back. And I told him I didn't want to have nothing to do with it. But he was like, you know, begging me, you know, to call her on my phone because she blocked him. So, you know, I'm all up in my head with that. You know, that I did the right thing and this is that. But you know what? I'm powerless over it now. You know, I did it. I hope everything worked out. But if it don't work out, it's not my fault. It's my brother's fault. It's my brother's fault. And I'm just hoping that, you know, the girl should be okay. You know, because, you know, she took him back. And at the end of the day, I'm powerless over all that. And I really don't even like the situation I'm in right now. I don't want no parts of this. I mean, I love my brother, but I just don't want no parts of it. And, you know, hearing him talk, he really needs, he needs a sponsor. He needs to work this program. I cannot be his sponsor. I can, you know, try to lead him in the right direction. I can share my experience, strength, and hope. But really, he needs to talk to other men. He needs to do the program. And I told him it's just as close as clicking a button on your phone. You only have to get the car and drive to a meeting, you know? And, you know, it was just some things that he said that was troubling me. I've been thinking about since he's been gone. All day I've been thinking about some of the things he said that have been troubling me. You know, he said, death must feel good. I'm like saying to myself, what? Who does that? Who thinks like that? I said, I don't even know if my brother's on some suicide tip. I'm like, what's really going on? He tried to, this is really crazy. And I don't know. I know that my help, I know my higher power will restore me to sanity. This too shall pass. I believe that I will be okay. I'll keep talking about it. I'll go over with my sponsor. And something I really just want to bail out and just be like, no, I can't help you anymore. And this is like making me like worry and sick. And I just don't think I can handle it. And I don't know if that's the right thing to do. It'd be like I'm shutting the door in his face and we're supposed to give it away to keep it, right? Like we're supposed to help another sick and suffering alcoholic, and I just don't even really know if I can do it. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Darlene. Monica, do you want to share?
Hi, my name is Monica, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much for your share, Spencer. I'm glad to see you here. I needed a meeting, and I got on. And I heard you tell your first drinking hope with 12 steps, and I really, really like that. Because through your share, I was able to hear that you actually did do the work. And from what you said it was like to now, like, you really do give hope that the program can work in more ways than just keeping me sober, right? Like keeping me sober and helping me become who God would want me to be. And you talked about all 12 steps. Like I heard it. Like I felt like you were writing me like a college paper and you were like, hey, this step is step. And like, you know, I can't even have like coherent thoughts enough to like speak like that. So props to you on that one. But right now I'm like in 6 and 7 and I heard you say, how do you even do 6 and 7, you know? And so, for me, you know, it's that, you know, I think you had said contrary action and asking God to, like, take it. And I feel like that's where I'm at right now, where I'm having these, like, character defects that are causing me, like, a lot of pain. And fortunately, like, it's been a few years, and I feel like my threshold for pain is, like, shorter and shorter. And now I'm getting to the place where those periods of pain are not lasting as long, so I'm able to get into action faster, and I'm hoping to get to the place of, like, not needing to be in pain to get into action, you know, one day, but I'm not there yet, you know, and I'm still trying to grow towards, like, who I think God would want me to be. So I heard so much good stuff, though, that you said, you know, about, like, being, I don't know, but you said step two, like, I swear, like, I have this issue going on, and just through your share, I was able to, like, get into the solution about my own stuff, and it was, like, came to believe that a power greater than myself restored me to sanity. And when I was new, I didn't have a concept of a higher power. And so I was actually grateful that it was written that way, because it doesn't say that my higher power needed to be defined for anything. I just needed to believe that something bigger than me, that wasn't me, I'm not God, thank God, could help me. And, you know, insanity for me looked like the way that my life looked like on the outside, the chaos. And it also was the insanity of, like, my brain, like, going all over. And so, like, I still have insanity. I still make my life crazy. I still can be unmanageable. And so I kind of feel like that's where I've been right now, is, like, in this disturbed place. I am disturbed, right? I recognize that today, right? And you talked about that, being restless, irritable, and discontent. And I still get there, right? But then I can also get into the solution, and I feel like that's what I got in this meeting. So I'm, like, so glad that you guys are here for me. You know, I was able to be, like, you know, with this issue, you know, I'm powerless over it. My life's unmanageable, you know. Only a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Thank God. And then I could give it away and tell God to take it. So, like, that's where I am. So, like, I'm able to, like, do that today, but that's only because you guys show me how to do that. And, like, I'm so glad that I was able to, like, do that right now. So I'm just like, okay. I felt like crap when I jumped on this meeting, and I feel, like, a lot better. And the last thing I just want to say is, like, I'm sorry for your loss. I've gone through a lot of things in recovery. And what I can say is that I'm grateful that Alcoholics Anonymous, and that I asked for help, and that Alcoholics Anonymous showed up for me, and that I'm glad that I wanted to stay sober more than I wanted to drink, because I was able to stay sober through all those things that had happened. And I've seen a lot of people walk through a lot of things in sobriety and do it sober, and they have their testament and their experience, right, hope to give. And I have my experience, strength, and hope to give with those situations, too. And I hope that everyone here just stays and we take another day. Thank you.
Thanks, Monica. Appreciate it. Bill, do you want to share?
I guess we've gotten to the bottom of the barrel here, haven't we? Hey, Spencer, thank you so much for being here and sharing. And I want to thank all of you for being here tonight. I've heard some things that really touched me, and I was making notes of some of the things that I heard tonight, not about your situation, but about my own situations that I was reminded of as you were talking. And I think a lot of this does line up very nicely with the idea of, we don't like to think of it this way. I don't like to think of it this way, but the second step, what it really does is tells me that I'm out of my ever living mind, you know? And I can still be that way, at times, when I get that conscious separation, when I fail to be connected to a power greater than myself. And so some of the things I wrote down, again, these are things about me that sort of resurfaced as I was hearing the things you guys were talking about. I remember feeling, especially early on, before I really got sober, certainly before I had any idea about getting sober, I remember this feeling of, that I was so worthless that, I mean, I didn't even, it was a tragic crime of the century that I was consuming oxygen, keeping my body alive, because the oxygen was worth more than my life. That's how low I felt at times, that I just wasn't even worthy of the oxygen, that other creatures should have it instead of me. And I heard it said tonight, it's not by accident that I'm sober today. And I believe that. Now, That doesn't mean that I have the power to keep me sober, but I do believe that I have a list of powers, capabilities, that can keep me busy doing other things rather than drinking. And that may be a little bit of a confusing thing to say, but I know that I know, for example, that I have the power on a regular basis to get out of my house and or out of my bed or whatever, wherever I'm at. And get to a meeting and to rub elbows with, whether it be virtually or in person, with other people who struggle with this condition and other people who are surviving and thriving, with alcoholism. I was reminded about many of the poor choices that I made. I was thinking too about some of the red and green and brown and clear liquids that got put into a single jar and then consumed. Just how terribly sick that made me. So I was reminded of that. And you know, another part of that insanity thing, I remember taking medications that belonged to other people that were prescribed by doctors to treat legitimate ailments that I did not have. And I took those things without any clear understanding of how they might impact me. I was just hoping they would make me feel different than I felt before I took them. And that is just plain insanity. I know that I have a long history of picking partners or friends or companions poorly, I've often found myself drinking to solve problems that were caused, you'll love this, by drinking, yeah? And it's this spiral staircase into hell, right, that I get myself on. And I was reminded that, you know, for me too, that the fellowship is a very important part of what we do. I love the relationships that I have with people in AA and outside of AA today too. But for me, the truth is that with no steps, I got no chance. No chance. Through the process of going through those steps, I've had opportunities to learn that, my anger, my rage is, We talk about that a little different way. We talk about it in the terms of resentment. I had some very deep and bitter resentments, and I have a long track history of gaining power through resentments by making myself a victim of other people, and that today, because I've learned that I'm a willing participant. In fact, I'm more often. I would say I'm very rarely, if ever, a victim. I wouldn't say none of us are ever not victims ever under any circumstances. But clearly, I'm far more often a perpetrator than I am a victim. And that today, instead of being bitter and resentful and a victim, today I get to enjoy relationships. You know, just a silly little example. I know Jose very well. I know Monica very well. I know Mike very well. I'm getting to know Spencer. Andy is a newer member to my community here, and I'm enjoying getting to know her. And Darlene, I hope I get to know even better. But I have relationships today, and those relationships are funny because these sponsors. If you don't have a sponsor today, be careful. Because, and I say that with a little bit of tongue in cheek, but what my sponsor has done to me repeatedly has asked me some really stupid questions, and then I'm only too happy to answer them, and then he turns the question on me. So for example, you know, I was complaining about my dad and some of the violence that took place in the past, and my dad, my sponsor asked me a question. He said, well, you know, have you ever thought about what you'd like a relationship with a son to be like, right? Like, what would that be like? And I found that an easy question to answer. You know, I would definitely want my son to be an active member of my life. I'd like to give him everything. I'd like to teach him everything I could. I'd want my son to be in my life. And my sponsor, you know, once he got that answer, he said, okay, well, how are you doing at being that son? And the same thing around, you know, romantic relationships. You know, I want her to be this, and I want her to look like that, and I want her to do this. And the question always comes back, well, how well are you doing at that list of things that you want from someone else? I wrote a few other things down, but I've run out of time here, so I'm going to stop babbling. But I really want to thank you, Spencer, for coming and giving, as my friend Monica said, a wonderful talk about how the steps have changed you. You know, going from the humble beginnings to I'm sure you probably wouldn't you know, be looking for unlike me, you probably aren't looking for statues to be built to you just yet. I still think that there should be statues to me, but that's just my own delusion. But it's obvious to me in the places that I see you that you're very much a valuable contributing member of our fellowship, and you're helping people to realize a better life than the one they came here with. And I appreciate you and what you do in our fellowship. And that goes the same for all the rest of you that have stayed with us tonight. So thank you for that. And Andy, I know you said you probably were preferred to not say anything further, but I know you're in a tough spot right now. Is there anything you'd like to say? We're happy to listen if you'd like to say anything else. Okay. Well, we're glad that you're here. We really are. Know that you're among people who understand and have great love for you. All right. So just for some closing announcements. You're welcome. You're welcome, dear. The Valley Group encourages sponsorship.